Hey, got the morning show with Aaron. I want to welcome Marie to the studio. Good morning.
Morning, Aaron, and Atamaria Whangaroa.
So we've got a grey old day out there. Why am I commenting on the weather? Commentating the weather.
It's as far as we've gotten conversation. Yeah, conversation about weather is okay, Aaron.
Is it? As a counsellor, you can recommend
that. That's how we start, isn't it? Hey, had a good day. What's your day been like?
Yeah,
Sun shining. Oh, it's a bit wet out there today.
Yeah.
The conversation started.
It's a bit cold is what it is.
Yeah. It's actually quite a nice day for winter. I got up and thought, what a beautiful day today is after all the rain we've had and all the storms.
Yeah, this week has been – there's no rain this week. It's a relief.
It's kind of nice. So I don't mind the cold, but I've got a fire, so –
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, without the fire, I'd probably be a little bit down, I think, Aaron, but yeah.
I met a lady on Thursday who was just outside the town hall, and she said she'd come downtown to find out what was going on. She said, I've got no power, no heating, no internet. And I was like, have you got a radio? And she's like, no. And she was like, she looked like she was about 60. I hope that's accurate. And I know a lot of young people don't have radios, but I was surprised an older person didn't have a radio. And I was like, have you got one in your car? And she's like, no. Because we actually had some information about what was going on, and you know the advice in emergencies, and it hadn't really reached the full emergency phase. Was listen to your radio, but if no one's got radios,
it was an interesting time. Now you brought that up because I was pretty housebound over that time, and I couldn't get out, and so
you didn't know what was going on.
Well, I can't. It was really difficult for me because I couldn't get out, and I don't think there was no power, so I couldn't contact. I didn't know what was going on. I was sitting in the dark at home.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, so I do wonder about that when things happen in our community and we've got people at home who are unwell or maybe aren't getting out of their home. You know, what are we doing to check in on those people? Because
People did start doing that. They did start going to see their neighbours. But this lady had come downtown. She was hoping that there would be some centre point in town where all the information was available.
And was there?
Well, it was me, I think.
Well, I think that's pretty important.
And it was not like I had everything. Like, I was still waiting on information to come through. But people were going into the... I went down to the library and I asked the council staff. I said, have you had people come in and asking you what's going on? And they're like, yeah, but we don't know.
That's really interesting.
Because they just, like, front people at a desk. They don't have a big link back. They're not the decision makers at that office. So
who are the decision makers in our community that decide in the moment that we need to have some hot soup or we need to have a connection point for people so that they can feel like they're still, you know, being able to connect with people?
Well, I mean, there is this like a civil defence resilience group, which technically I'm part of, but...
Yeah, I always wanted to be a part of that too.
That's all the technicalities and getting the paperwork done so far.
Yeah, isn't that getting water and making sure that generators are there? And
well,
it's
whatever's required.
That's a different level than the human level of our people in our community.
But both are required, right?
In
an emergency. And it wasn't a full-blown emergency, and Well Networks were working pretty hard, and they brought generators out quickly, so you wouldn't have felt it where you were, but there's... We were lucky. We're on the same circuit as the rest home. So they brought a generator out to make sure the rest home was taken care of. And Raglan Medical, the service station, and the water. And Foursquare got their own generator. So there were little patches around those places that had electricity.
Yeah, I think it would be good to get some feedback, Aaron, if anyone's really listening out there. Hello. Maybe the community house could be a point of contact for that. Maybe we could have a piece of paper and a feedback form from people in our community who may have not have found that time so easy. And let's hear why they didn't find it so easy. So I don't even know what the answer is to that, Aaron. I'm just putting it out there what it was like for me, who is a person who can look after herself.
It's interesting. But
I couldn't actually make any contact with anybody. And I was in the dark.
Literally.
And if I had no heating, if I didn't have a fire, I would have been sitting there freezing. And probably would have got really worse.
And in some ways, we are more vulnerable now than we used to.
Yeah.
Like this lady was basically, she was back in the days before electricity. She had to walk into the middle of town to find out what was happening. Except back in those days, we had better connections.
Yes,
because we weren't sitting at home looking at a screen. We were out a lot more interacting with people. And so, and we knew, I think we probably knew our neighbours better.
Yeah, I agree. We, you know, I think in Raglan
like I'm talking pre-electricity.
Yeah.
20 years
when
ago.
When the horse and cart used to go around Raglan, pretty much.
Yeah. But 20 years ago, there was only, you know, newspapers, TV and radio. Mm. And so people knew, and people, like we had a radio in every room of our house when I was a kid. It seemed ridiculous. Right, but now a lot of people don't have that. We've got three radios at our place, but they're all really old.
Right.
Like even I don't have a new radio. So I actually looked up, maybe we can get some radios and start giving them to people.
That's a great idea.
You can get some really cheap wholesale radios, but they were so cheap I was a bit worried. Like $3.58 for a wholesale radio. I'm like, sales are $7 in the shops. I don't know how reliable
that's...
It's
a deal, folks.
I don't know how reliable that's going to be in an emergency.
AM only.
No, it was FM. And we could get Raglan Community Radio branded on the side and like start handing them out.
That'd be so cool.
But I sort of thought giving out something like I don't know if it's high quality, like people might go to use it in a real emergency and it wouldn't work. So I wouldn't want to be like responsible for that.
But the idea is good, and the idea of having radios for people to be able to have is a good idea.
Well, that was over in the... it's like in Gabriel on the East Coast. They went several days without anything but radio. Like that was all that was left. And it's because the cell phone network's run by private corporations. And I'm not going on anti-corporate rant. It's just that they have a different idea about risk. They're prepared to accept a higher risk for their network falling down because it's not worth spending the money to go for like really low percentage. To prepare for things that are very unlikely to happen,
right? So this is about money.
It is about money. Mm. Yeah, the corporate sector's not prepared to spend the money to be ready for that sort of stuff. But the old radio networks that were built by the government, of course, government engineers were like belt and braces, and everything was right. The worst possible emergency imaginable would still be working.
Yes, because that's coming from the wartime when we had to have.
But also a different perspective, like. It's not so much now, but yeah, back in those days in the government, like you made everything to last. Mm. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm just describing the situation. It's not what we plan to talk about, but I guess it is on everyone's mind still.
Well, I think it's important that we know how we get through emergencies and not at the surface level, which is your natural stuff of keeping power and water going, but I mean actual contact with people. And like through COVID, we had an experience of that because we were shut down for so long and neighbours had to come out and sort of see each other. it was hopeful
over
that,
the fence, though.
Yeah, it was hopeful that we had learnt something through that.
I think we have. I saw a post on Facebook this morning from someone saying how great it was that the stuff they saw happening in the community, like people were looking after each other.
Yeah, well, I didn't get out to see, but I know that one of the supermarkets, there was some soup was going. Oh, no, it was Orca. That's right, I saw it on Facebook. Yeah. Orca had free soup.
They had electricity. That little part of town had electricity because they were near Raglan Medical.
And that was brilliant. I mean, that's community coming together and, I think.
And that's what we need to do.
It would have been maybe, I don't know, if the community house or the food bank could have opened up and had a pot of soup on.
They had no electricity.
Oh, of course, right. We don't have any generators.
Yeah. So the thing is, like, I interviewed Lisa Thompson last week and she's like, the message is, you have to be ready to survive for 3 days in an emergency without any government or council help or anything like that. And people do very quickly turn to go, okay, who's coming to rescue us? Like, what's going on? What's the council doing? Who's doing something? Can you give us some information? They want to know that people are coming to help them. And you have to be prepared for 3 days in the worst case scenario without help.
You've reminded me of something, Aaron.
Which means you look after your neighbours.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
But we could, and I remember with civil defence, and I'm talking, you've just brought a memory forward for me years ago when I was doing the food bank and we were looking at civil defence then and where could we have a storehouse which carried blankets and the medical supplies, your water and food and a storage place that was set up for community like a storehouse, basically, that was all ready to go. That would cover those at least a week's worth.
I guess extreme waste is Extreme Zero Waste is a place that just happens to have a lot of stuff.
I think we do need to look at something, because when I'm that memory you brought up, I suggested the food bank, and that having something under the food bank, secure lockup place, would, and the civil defence could have been a part of that. But, you know, that hasn't happened and wasn't developed, but that doesn't mean it can't be developed somewhere else. And I think that the reason I thought like that is because Raglan is cut off from Hamilton.
That's something we're very aware of, and, that, and that's why, like, we're equipped as a radio station, because we're going to have to broadcast, and, you know, like if the whole town hall collapsed, as long as I wasn't in it, our gear is, a lot of our gear is stored at my place or Sean's place, and we could set up a complete backup
radio, which I think is awesome.
Radio station. And we found out during COVID that the national media, that level of media, didn't have useful information for Raglan. Aside from the fact that they were pointing the finger at Raglan going, "Are you anti-vaxxerville? Carry on, blah, blah, blah," which was really unhelpful. Even when they were trying to be helpful, they couldn't, because they didn't have access to the level of detail that we needed to operate at. So we'd have to have local decision makers
making
decisions and then broadcasting that information.
Yeah. I agree. And I've always said Raglan is kind of set apart. I think it's like a test case for how things can go, you know. And I do think that we could set something up here that is more user-friendly than we presently have, which seems to be a bit disjointed in the gathering point, and where do we meet and where do we gather. And because if we don't have a gathering point, or if we don't have a place where we meet, then those ones that are on the fringe edges don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't know where to go. There is no information coming. And if you've got older people, they'll just stay at home. They won't venture out. So knowing our community, you know, and the needs in our community, and that we can get cut off very easily. We've got one road in, one road out, pretty much.
And we're so reliant on electricity
now. And we're reliant on that. We're reliant on, you know, our water and everything. I mean, luckily we're pretty self-sufficient there. We have catchments. But, yeah, it's not going to last forever. So we do need to think of these things. What are our connection points? I love the fact that there was soup going, you know, just to gather, because people get nervous and anxious, and all our issues come to the forefront when the power goes off, oddly enough. You know, or there is a threat of well, I don't know what to do, you know, like there was, nothing's, you know, working. I can't even go to the bank. I can't get my money out. I can't go and pay for my, how do I do this?
There was also there was actually quite a positive vibe down the end of town where there was electricity. The various cafes down there were as packed out as they've ever been, and there was kind of a bit of a buzz in the air, because there was a bit of novelty, and I think that people found the novelty stimulating. It hadn't yet reached, you know, if that had gone on for a week, we would have lost that buzz.
But that's right.
But, you know, we didn't, and it was, you know, and some people were struggling, but a lot of people were like, "Oh, this is cool. This is different," you know.
Yeah, and I think that's all good for the ones that are out there and able to get to those those points.
Well,
but
yeah,
I think what we need to do as a community is rise up a little bit more than that, and not just think of ourselves and I'm connecting with somebody, but who isn't connected, who isn't here, who, you know, who do I know personally that may need some support right now? And that comes from, you know, those gathering points and talking with each other, and then writing a list, and who do you know and who do you know, and should we go and check in on, you know,
and so that was happening, but we've got no way of knowing if it was thorough, if everyone...
Oh, it's never going to be thorough, I don't think. Aaron,
no, how would you know? That's the thing.
And well, we're only going to know by the connection point, because it comes through you knowing your neighbour. You know, that's how you're going to know, because it's not going to be you that has all the information, or me as a counsellor that knows who's unwell in our community, or the doctor even, who's going to know, Mr... such and such needs checking in on, you know. It's going
to
be...
I mean, during COVID, that's what they were trying to do. There was a group of kind of community leaders trying to work that out, and they're like, okay, so this person here, they know a lot of people. We're going to keep in touch with them, and we are going to talk to the doctors, because they know the ones that they think are vulnerable. But there's no single solution.
No. And so a connection point where you've got food going and you've got people gathering, that's when people start going, oh, you know, I haven't checked in with, or do you know... well, have you heard about, is such and such okay? You know, it's just chatter. Mm. And it's at that point we go, oh, yeah, true, we should go and check in on that person. Community knows community. Not one person knows community.
Yeah, yeah.
We all of us collectively know our community. So we've got to have a connection point where that community can chatter so we don't miss anybody. Because why would we want to? We're a small place. We don't need to miss anybody. Each one of us in our own little networks will know of ones in our streets or the older person or, you know, has anyone checked in with? Yeah, I think it's really important, and we can do that in Raglan. And, you know, if people know they're cared for, our mental health is, mind health, I'd rather say mind health, is going to be a whole lot better if we know that we're cared for in community and it's not just a statement that we use, but that it's an active statement. We're actively in community, and you know, that's a great feeling to have, and we need to increase that throughout New Zealand, not just in Raglan. It needs to be in every community that...
It's easier for us.
Because it is actually. Yeah. You're right. Because we are separate enough to know that we actually have to do this.
And we have our town has quite a strong identity, probably more so than a lot of other small towns, but I think most small towns do, and that helps as well.
Yeah, we've got a great identity, and we've got some really brilliant minds here. We just need to get them all together and one, have a connection point that is that we know about as community, that is big enough to hold people, and resources for whether it be heating or, you know, blankets, food, water.
Do you know what, something that was a problem was... Mike from the community house came in on Thursday afternoon to see me, and he's like, I've heard that the power's coming back on this afternoon, this evening, and tomorrow. So which is it?
Yeah, well, that's the problem when you're sitting at home, especially on your own.
Well, he was wandering around talking to people, and that wasn't helpful either, because I don't know where this information was coming from, but it was three contradictory bits of information. So,
and who is the information giver? Like, who...
Honestly, Maria, it was probably me.
Right. There's the connection point, which I think is the most... A radio station should be the connection point, because that's going to get out there.
Yeah, I was in touch with the people at council and at World Networks, so I was getting information from them. But even then, it comes slowly, and I didn't feel like I had everything.
And this is just a question, do they contact you, or do you have to go and try and contact them?
Oh, I don't wait.
Right. So they don't naturally just contact communities and go, well, this is what's happening in your community what to expect.
Well, no, because this morning they put stuff on their Facebook page. That was the first source of information, but I wanted to interview somebody and I wanted some more detail than they were giving. So I kind of chased them from Well Networks for an interview. But this morning, there were power cuts right now in various spots around Raglan. And the only announcement for that was it's on their faults page.
Wow.
And Roger Gallagher from Raglan 23 website, local news website, happened to spot it last week.
Good on him.
And he put something out last night, and we've backed it up this morning to help remind people. And I've been talking about it on the air
as well. Yeah, I did see that, but I didn't understand it. Like, I was like, oh, okay, what's that about?
Yeah, so planned outages.
Right.
Yeah, planned outages, stuff that they were going to do anyway. And I guess they never normally tell us about it. The power just goes off, and they do it while we're at work, so most of us don't even notice. Come home and the oven clock
stuff.
Is off.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so comms departments are interesting, Marie. I had this explained to me by Maki, who's the editor of the Chronicle and works with us here at the station too, is that the point of a comms department, their priority is to protect the image of the people they work for, the organisation they're working for. So it's not to get information out. So I had to work hard to get information out of World Networks. Our council's actually quite good, their comms department. They are forthcoming with information, and they gave me a bit of information ahead of time and said you can't really quote anyone official on this, but we know that there's more generators coming to town, which they got online at 3 PM, and most of the town had power at that point. The Well Networks comms department is like most of the comms department I talked to, where they didn't want to do an announcement until they had everything worked out, and they checked everything, and they checked with all the different departments within their organisation. And by which point, so I got to interview this guy at 3, and then the power came back on like 10 minutes later. It's like, and people want reassurance, you know. So he could have come on at 10 and said, look, here's what we're doing. I can't give you a timeline right now, except to say that we hope to have it done by the end of the day. And we're still searching, and for the fault, because there was a problem, they couldn't find the fault. But people feel more reassured. And people seem to need reassurance. That's what I've noticed through this and through COVID.
Absolutely. Of course they do.
They want to be reassured that the people whose jobs it is to fix the problem are doing it.
Yeah.
And if they hear from the networks manager that he's got X amount of people out there right now all tasked with sorting the problem out, they're like, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. People need to know that something is happening.
Yeah, even if it's not great, at least we know that everything's been done that can be done.
I think it's interesting that they're not contacting the radio station as their first port of call.
They don't know who we are. It's well networks. Well, they do now. Like once I got in, I just contacted their media department, and they were back and forth all day to me, so they were good, and they're still sending stuff the next day.
So these are good things to go forward on. To learn from what needs to be tightened up here on this end, so that as a community we can function better under times of extreme stress. because in reality, you know, sometimes it's not going to be one day. One day it could be 3 days, it could be 5 days, you know. Mm. And like you say, we're all good with one day. We're all chatty and happy. When it's a couple of days, you know, we've been put out. But a week later, we won't be as happy as we were on those first couple of days.
No.
The water's going to be taken down, or, you know, the food supplies are running low, and, you know, people can't get to work, and stresses start to arise.
Well, that was just a power cut. Whereas, like, you think about Cyclone Gabrielle on the East Coast, that was a power cut with dangerous flooding.
Massive. And I saw on the news the other night somewhere where they're still out of a bridge and they can't get there.
Oh, they're still rebuilding stuff. Just
I mean, we hear that on the news and we've forgotten about it as soon as the next thing comes along. But those people have to live those lives and they have to try and survive.
Our State Highway 23 got rebuilt really quickly because that was a priority. But the Kawhia Road had a slip that happened at the same time. They're fixing that now, like literally now.
Right.
Yeah. So, because it wasn't the whole road. So, I don't know how, and I don't know how bad it was. It might have just been a brief bit where it was one way on the Kawhia Road.
Do we not have enough road workers, Aaron?
Are they going
to Australia? Are we losing everybody?
Well, no. The problem is you can't just have
everyone exiting?
You want thousands of people ready to go for an emergency, but what are they doing in the meantime, right? They're all you've got to have them gainfully employed.
Well, I just had this kind of thought that actually everyone's exiting New Zealand because we're not paying us enough, we're not valuing our workers enough.
That's ongoing. But also, there's large other parts of the world where that's the same. But Australia is not as far down that road as we are.
Well, yeah, let's hope we don't lose too many more people that we need them here. We need our Kiwis home.
People will be leaving now. The government's just fired 47,000 people, so.
Oh, it's messy.
Yeah, and they're crashing the economy to get interest rates down.
And it interests me as a councillor that they expect councillors to clean up this mess, or psychologists to fix the mental health, mind health in our country.
I don't think they expect that. I think they just don't care.
Well, yeah, I would agree. It's very sad, you know, when I look at how people are being treated. Through even our medical system, not being seen quick enough or not getting attended to early enough. It's a sad state of affairs. I don't know what to do about all that, Aaron, but I do know that our mental health is down because we're not being attended to in many different ways, whether it be our physical needs or our financial needs. You know, our country is being, not going well.
It's, I mean, we know that the mental health system is in a permanent state of crisis and the people in it want to fix it, but they're unable to.
We were talking about mind health for, how long have we been talking about this stuff? For forever, you know, and it's always been the lower income, those kind of on the fringy edges of society, you know, the drugs and the alcohol, and these are where the mental health comes in. And but hello, that's not a truth. Mental health is across the board. Now we're going to see it massively so as what we consider normal people, whatever that's supposed to mean, having huge mental health issues.
I think there's lots of things that we talk about as causes, and social media is one of them. But the one that's the slowest, most insidious one is that and people from the right won't like hearing this. So, but I mean, I plough on regardless. Since 1984, when Roger Douglas and Labor came into power, ironically, the economic system has been taking money from the poor to give to the rich.
Mm.
And it hasn't happened necessarily that fast. I mean, people who lose jobs will feel a big difference. But we've got to the point now where effective incomes are a lot lower than they used to be.
Mm.
But it's happened slowly. Yes. It's happened slowly. And so
like most things.
More people are struggling, but they're still taking the blame for their struggle. Like, I just can't make ends meet. Like, I need to work harder or get a better job. I need to be more capable. Or need to be more capable. Like the baby boomer generation are looking at my generation saying, what's wrong with you guys? Like, we worked hard and we did it ourselves. And not all of them. Not all of them are saying that. But it was a very different environment. So,
and now we've got young people going, why the heck would I want to work my whole life to get to retirement when they know darn well by the time they get there they've been worn out and now they're just like, yeah, there's nothing much left. Well, and you spend your whole life working to retire, Aaron. It's the whole setup.
I have a whole question about that too. Young people now can see that they're probably not going to own a house unless they inherit something. Which means,
so I think we're in a shift. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I do think we're in a mind shift across the world, really, of how we do things. and it's not going to be pretty as we shift to a different level of how we respond and do life.
Well, there's two ways we can go. Like populations under stress and starting to fill with envy, they can turn their envy on outsiders. Like in the US, it's like immigrants.
Mm.
Blame the immigrants for taking their jobs. But there used to be jobs for everyone.
Yes,
in the 60s and 70s in the US, everyone was riding
American dream.
Everyone was participating in the American dream. Same here. We were participating in the New Zealand dream. Everyone had their fair share.
Mm.
Their quarter acre paradise was. It's a cliche, but actually.
But we thought it was going to be like that forever.
There were people planning a different way of doing economics so that it wouldn't be. Like, that's not a conspiracy. That's just what you would expect. Mm-hmm. The rich people, the super rich who are very greedy, trying to find ways to get more money. Like, that's...
The whole setup,
that's what you should expect.
Logically, in our logic mind, is not working.
But the question is... Can people see that, or do they just look at their neighbour and be envious, or they look at that other person and say, you took my job or you've taken my money? Like, and there's a discussion going on at the moment about the rates. People are like, oh, the council's like charging too much for rates, they're inefficient, da, 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 da. And I tried to explain to someone yesterday, the big picture is that we now have less money, less effective spending money. The council's trying to do the same stuff they used to do, but we've got less money to pay to their rates, and so it's harder to pay the rates, and more and more people are unable to pay the rates. Mm. But people get lost in their anger, and kicking the council is a fun game.
Mm.
But are we going to let ourselves get lost in our anger, or are we going to try and actually understand what the cause is? And I find it really frustrating, because my whole job is about trying to give people the information so they understand what's going on, but they're just getting excited about the stuff they're getting on social media and from their friends and their social networks and real life networks, just the angerness and bitterness directed at someone, at a scapegoat.
We're human.
And it's understandable. It's understandable, but it leads us down to the point where we've got a choice. Do we go the way that Germany went in the 30s and go fascist, or do we avoid that and we go, or do we cite, do we leap over that to what happened after World War II, which is when social services started being rolled out? Because, like, in the UK, they thought, you know, Winston Churchill, war hero, when he didn't win the next election. And what happened, I've read, is that all the soldiers came. The election was delayed until the soldiers could get back and vote. And they voted for the Labour Party because they were bringing out social services. And those guys had been at war and they'd seen hell and come back. Mm. And they didn't want anyone to suffer. So the question is, do we have to go through hell first before people are like, we don't want anyone to suffer? Or can we start now saying we don't want people to be suffering in our community? Because we do have, there's enough wealth in our world to look after everybody.
Oh, my gosh. There's enough food in the world.
But we don't need to tax the middle class to help the lower class. We need to tax the upper class and the corporate sector. That's where the money is. Now, people get confused. They think, oh, you want to raise our taxes. You're going to take my money. I'm struggling. Middle class people will be saying that. I'm like, you're right. We don't want your money. We want the corporate sector's money. But anyway, so this is the big picture, and you are the counsellor dealing with people face-to-face, one-on-one.
It's an impossible picture because, as you're talking, I can guarantee you there's going to be nothing good coming out of any of that.
One thing that's good, though, I think, is if you understand that, then you don't blame yourself for your perceived failures. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who feel like failures because they can't keep a job or they can't earn enough money to support their family. And it's not their fault. It's not their fault. The world has changed from when their parents were doing this.
Mm. But it's our language too, Aaron. See, they can't, I can't, right? We can't. It's a full stop. It's the language is all about... it's very negative, you know. I can't do this because of, you know. So there's nothing positive about that. So you could say, you know, what's another strategy that we could use? Because this one isn't working.
And this is where you get as the counsellor on the one-on-one level. Mm. And I've described the environment that's out there, but you've still got to say, okay. If you're going to say can't and you lose all hope, then that's no good.
No.
And there are better ways. It's a difficult situation, but there's better ways to handle it.
Yeah, so see, when we say I can't, we can't, you can't, we've stopped there. We're going to stop, you know. But we need somebody who's going to speak strategy into us. So, yes, I know we feel like we can't. And as a people, we often stop moving forward because individually we feel like we can't.
Yeah.
We can't come up against this government. Individually, we're all hurting, and it's hurting us. It's hurting our families. It's hurting our communities. It's wrong. Nobody should be homeless. Nobody should be hungry in New Zealand. This is wrong. Honestly, as a group of people, you know, we really do need to stand up to a small minority group in our government. I want to say that small minority group in our government.
Yeah, but they'll say
that are running our country and are destroying it. That's the reality.
But they'll say they've got support because they got voted in.
I don't care what they say anymore, Aaron. Because as a human being, what I want to say is you are raping our country. Okay. That's what they're doing.
Well, but okay, that's how you feel.
Yeah.
But you're not going to talk like that when you're being a counsellor, are you?
To them, I would. Feel so strongly.
If you're counselling them, yeah, but you're counselling.
I'm not as a counsellor,
they're not
but
listening.
As a human being, I want to say you are a minority group in our country. The government are a handful of people, right? These are not big giants up there with machine guns and machetes telling us that we have to do this.
But how do you deal with the person you're advising one-on-one as a counsellor who's struggling with their mental health because they lost their job and they haven't got enough money and, you know, all those external factors are affecting their mental health?
Exactly, and the government is expecting me as a counsellor to fix what they made happen.
So how do you fix it?
Take them out. That's what I would say. Nobody wants to hear it.
Councillor Marie's going for her AK-47.
I am. No, I don't mean it like that. I don't like take them out. But yeah. I mean, like, we are giving authority to people who don't deserve authority over us because they are not treating us with respect or value as their citizens.
But they've got, at the moment, they've got a voting population behind them. So we can't...
Well, even when we say that... What are we actually saying? Those words, what are they actually saying?
So what I'm saying to you is...
So there's a group of people out there that vote a certain way, right? And then we think that that is the voice of our nation?
Well, they claim that is the voice of the nation.
I doubt it, but because half the people that need to have a voice don't have a voice, aren't being heard. They're trying to survive and they don't even have the information that these people have that they're trying to say that these ones have, these lesser ones have. We're not given that information. We hear bits through the news and we give them power. We've given it as a country.
You're giving us an all is lost speech. We need you to give us a
okay, so
there's hope speech.
There is hope in our human nature that we will wake up and actually say, nah, stop it. We want to feed our people. We want our kids to be educated well. We want our children to have homes. Full stop. That's not a compromise. I'm not going to compromise this with a government. This is just full stop. This is our country. This is our nation. If we don't stand up and as a group of people and say, nah, who are you making these decisions? I don't care that you're a bank. I don't care that you sit behind a desk and say, you can have this, but you can't. Who are you? What power do you have as an individual? Because as corporately, as a country, we have a heck of a lot more power when we stand together and say, humanity means more to me than your business. Okay, it really does.
Well, that is true. That is true, and that's the ultimate power.
That's it. Bottom line, people don't want to hear that we're sheep, but we are, because nobody will stand. We've got a couple of little voices, and we've gotten lost in that, in the minority voice being heard, right? And so now we've gotten so caught up in this minority voice that what we're listening to is rubbish. It's setting us off track from our humanity. Care for each other. Feed our kids, for goodness sake.
Part of the political tactics is to use social media now to generate feelings of anger. And there was a lot of hate directed at Jacinda for her policies during COVID, even though they were the same as pretty much every country around the world. So you can't say to people, oh, you've been manipulated by these political actors with memes on social media, right? Mm-hmm. And then I see other ones against, who's that young autistic woman who's a climate change campaigner, Greta Thunberg, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of older men passing memes amongst each other, poking fun at her.
Mm.
And how do you say to them, actually, you've been manipulated, because they're feeling good at, they're feeling empowered by poking fun at a 15-year-old autistic girl.
Wrong.
So people have been manipulated, right? But how do you tell them they've been manipulated?
Well, ego is a big thing, Aaron, and we have to deal with our own egos. And we've been hoodwinked for so long that we've forgotten to follow the real thread of what's going on, and we've gotten sidetracked into all these silly little things that just keep us so bound up in anger. You're right. We're angry. We're all angry about something, but I want to come back to compassion and care. For, you know, this isn't about getting angry. I mean, my voice might rise, but I feel compassionate about this. No child should be hungry in New Zealand. This is New Zealand. We are two little islands. This is not a big deal for us. We are being hoodwinked by a group of people that have a lot of power over a very little country. For what reason? I'm not sure. I just don't get it. When I see kids that aren't being fed or are living in cars, we can't just hear this stuff and pretend it's in America, which is a massive big place and you can get lost in. We can travel New Zealand in one day. This is not a big place. I feel embarrassed as being here, knowing that our kids aren't being taken care of. And trying to shuffle this off to a social welfare system? Oh my goodness, like, where is our responsibility? No, if there's an empty home, you know, and it's pretty barren, and a family wants to live in it, then live in it. I think that's
happening, to be honest.
Well, I don't blame people. How dare we put people on the street when there are empty homes? It's not right. How dare we put not feed our kids, or looking at our kids going and they're cold? I mean, who are we as human beings? We can't do this stuff. We can't continue to pretend we're blind. So, yes, it sounds hopeless, Aaron, and I'm feeling like, yeah, I'm putting a lot out there. But I tell you what, there is hope. There's hope in community. And Raglan is an awesome community. We can do this. We don't need a government to say, you're allowed to do this. We can do whatever we want to set up what we need to support community. And everyone in New Zealand could do that in their own communities, regardless of what a person says behind their desk. Just stand up and feed your kids. You know, give some clothes. Like, take some care. We're gonna have to bring humanity back, because big business will wipe us out. The big mega stores. Oh, we've got a sale over here. It's not. What are we doing?
You're fairly unique, though, Marie, because you started the food bank.
We've got to go back to human.
You've acted on your beliefs by doing that.
Well, we have to. We have to, Aaron. We have to.
The rest
otherwise,
of us struggle.
You can look back on our lives at the end of our lives and go, "What did I do? What did I do about any of that? And what's the point, you know, if you aren't going to stand up and actually step forward with your belief systems? Humanity, come on, this is not America. We are not some big nation that we can't come together. Man, we could come together massively."
Well, we have done at times.
Yeah, we need to be motivated enough. But I do think that as a nation, that's too hard to do. I do think we can do it in community. That's where I think the hope is.
Well, we kind of did it as a nation at the start of COVID. But now that
we've got an inkling of it.
But there'll be some people out there who, if they hear me say that, they'll immediately get very angry and say that Jacinda did this and Jacinda did that.
Well, there we go.
And the question, the question is not who's right about that. The question is, how long do we want to stay in that anger state? Because, Marie, what's going on in our heads when we're in that anger state? Like, how does our decision making go?
We're in high alert, or we're in an anxious mode. So we're kind of like, on the edge of things, always kind of like, ooh, something's not right. So we never get to be in that place of peace, that place of calm, which is a natural state for us. And I don't think it's a natural state anymore. Now we have to try and find it somewhere by the beach.
It's interesting. It's interesting you say that, because someone sent me a video of Liz Gunn, who was the leader of the New Zealand Loyal Party. They got like 1% at the last election. But her message was, there are dark forces arrayed against us. Now is the time. We have to fight now. It's like keeping people... It was a speech that kept people in that frame of mind that you're talking about. And I don't know whether she's consciously or subconsciously doing it. I'm not going to get into judgment about that. But that's what's happening with the people who are following her. If they're hearing that stuff all the time, they're just going to stay in that state of mind. And I know from myself, if you're really honest with yourself, think about the type of decisions you make when you're angry and the type of decisions you make when you're calm.
Yeah.
If I'm really honest with myself, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, and it is, because we go offline when we're angry.
Yeah, the things I do when I'm angry.
You know, but our whole society...
I don't want to say they're really, really awful, just they're not the ones I would do.
But our society is set up for anger. How can we not be angry? So you've got to look at that a little bit.
I wouldn't say our society's not set up for it, but there's people pushing those buttons knowing that they'll get something out of it.
I'm talking about the government.
Yeah, yeah.
When I say that, I'm talking about how that government is set up. It is not set up to feed society.
There's another thing I want to say about this too, because the left-wing people who will be listening saying, those right-wing governments, they get in all their...
I don't even know, left-wing, right-wing.
Yeah.
When did we ever get caught up into all of this?
So it's a simple label I can put on something. So the people who are still listening to us, because we're talking politics, will be the ones who agree with us. But we will be going, those right-wingers, they're pushing those right-wing people's buttons... And they're all wrong. And the point is, and yes, they are making right-wing supporters angry. But if we go in and try and fight them, which is a lot of people on the left are trying to do right now, we're just stoking that anger. Now, this is the really hard thing, because you want to go in and stop them. You want to stop the unhappiness and the suffering that they're causing. But we have to be really careful that we're not just increasing that anger.
Yeah, because we will. It'll be volatile, and there'll be an upset, and there'll be... it'll get gnarly.
And if we keep doing stuff that continues to keep David Seymour's supporters angry,
see less.
Yep. If we continue to like that, if we keep doing those things that keep his supporters angry, he maintains his power base, and he knows that. He understands that, but the rest of us don't. It's more important.
He's an upstart. He's an aggravator. He aggravates people, and he knows
that.
You can see it. Look at it. It's written all over him. Just ignore him. Who is he?
It is actually better. It is actually better to ignore him than to fight him.
Yeah, totally ignore
him because he makes mileage out of the fighting.
But he has a voice. He's got a mic. He's got a voice. He's being heard, right? That's the minority. He's a minority to me. He's just a minority voice that actually the most of us out here do not agree with him.
And, well, no, and we know that.
But he has. But he has standing. Like, why are we allowing this? When most of us know that he's an upstart.
But he's only got 7% of the vote. Like, that's very small minority.
Yeah, but he's got 70% of our ears.
Yeah, but we're still stuck in the anger, Marie.
Well, this is it though. He's got 7% of the vote, 70% of our ears. He's got more of our listening than most people in our.
So what should we be doing?
Turn him off.
Okay.
Ignore him.
All right.
Stop giving him power. Honestly, if nobody acknowledged him, if we just saw him for the foolish man that he is, stop empowering him.
But see, that's the thing. Like, he only needs 7% of the population to not think he's foolish, right? Those of us who think he's foolish, if we get stuck in our anger, we are empowering him. We get stuck in our anger and go to fight him and fight his supporters. If we fight his supporters, then we're empowering him.
I tell you what.
That's why I keep wanting to talk about anger.
New Zealanders just need to say, you're not touching the treaty, and just stick by it. I mean, that's all he's doing is causing ruckus over the place.
But see, I think you're stuck in campaign mode now.
Well, you know, somebody's got to come up with something. If you can continue to give people like that power, honestly, come on. Really? Like, he's not even somebody. I wouldn't give him the time of the day. If I had him down the street and he was chatting away with all that rubbish, I'd be like, man, you're an idiot. Are you okay?
Actually,
are you on something? Like,
actually,
I'd be thinking there's something wrong with him.
If you met him just as a normal person without the trappings of power, you probably would
That's
think
right.
that he was a bit weird.
So we do need to isolate people like that and see them for who they are, because they're put in the limelight for a reason.
But see, all my questions at the moment are looking at if we go into battle the wrong way, we empower him. So how do we control our anger so that we don't – so our strategy is right? Because you're talking about you want to make the political change happen.
Mm.
But, yeah, we have to be disciplined with our anger.
Well, I think that's a human nature. Anger is a secondary emotion.
Yep.
Our first emotion is we're hurting, right? But we don't want to tell people we're hurting, so we go to anger. That is our natural response. So if you know that anger is a secondary emotion, and really what you need to say is, actually, I'm hurting. And if we're more honest about how hurt we are by what this person is saying, then we may get to some more deeper issues of what's going on here. We're angry because we're not being heard, right? And the reality is we're hurting from what he is saying. This is causing us great pain, great grief. And we want you to stop speaking like that, but he won't stop. So we get angry towards him. So how do you deal with this? Well, disempower him by just ignoring him, for one. Okay, that's not going to take it away, and it's not going to stop what's happening in the politics. But just turn him off. Stop listening to him. Honestly, just stop listening to him. And let the clogs of the powers that be turn and twist and do what they do. Come back to community and work with community. Stop worrying about what these guys are doing out there. They are nothing to our country. They do nothing, pretty much nothing to it. What matters to our country is our communities and how we deal with community, how we work with community and the people in them, because these are the people. This is the people. This is what's real, is humans. You know, human beings, that's what we are, doing life, not trying to destroy each other, murder and kill and... you know, these are really such negative ways of, it's just not even life. So our twisted ways, Aaron,
I
have to be adjusted. Come back to community. What do we need to do when we're in times of trouble in community? How do we connect? When we get into if you have a strong community, Aaron, right, and there's wisdom in that community has a voice. Then you've got some power.
Mm. Should we stop there?
Amen.
All right. We've been talking to Marie. And that's our Let's Talk segment. We simply talked all over the shop. We did. I want to reflect on the first part, though, where we talked about some of the, what we talked about was the good neighbours in our community, and the huge part of our community that when things went wrong, we just turned and looked after each other. That's who we want to be.
That's who
we don't want to be. People, we don't want to be the people fighting about politics and getting angry and losing our rag. We want to be the people who, when our community needed support, we were there.
And that we can look after community and actually look back on those ones and go, we don't need your input. We don't need that. We're fine. Thank you. We're good. Good to go.
We don't need the anger input. No. Yeah. All right, Marie. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk to Marie again. We're on a 4-week schedule now because she's got her own show. Although you won't be here this Friday, will you?
You might be. Hoping to be.
Who was filling in for your show on Friday last week?
That was Denise.
Denise.
Yes. She did a great job, man.
Yeah, that she handled the technology quite better than you, Marie.
I know, but she told me later, hey, she told me later she understands the pressure now.
Yep.
That the pressure is real. But I was amazed. She did a great job.
Yeah, all right. Good. So that'll be 12 o'clock midday is Marie's show, Faith Matters. All right, time to go. I'll see you all again tomorrow morning, Thursday morning.